Today on Family Talk with Greg Laurie and Dr. James Dobson.
The family is like the red blood cell in the body. It carries a globule of oxygen, having to do with the gospel. And so that is what I'm trying to do, is to use the family, strengthen the family, support the family, and therefore pass on the gospel of Jesus Christ to others.
What a powerful clip explaining the importance of the family. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to do something special. There are a lot of people who would like to sit down with my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and ask him questions about his life and his ministry. Well, recently, Pastor Greg Laurie interviewed my dad for a Sunday morning service at Harvest Fellowship in Southern California and asked many of those questions. Pastor Laurie asked my dad about meeting my mom, Shirley, and why he is passionate about the institution of the family, the impact fatherless homes have on our culture, and much more. And over the next two Family Talk programs, we are excited to share that interview with you. So here now is Pastor Greg Laurie as he welcomes my dad, Dr. James Dobson, on this edition of Family Talk.
Let's give a warm Harvest welcome to Dr. James Dobson.
What a great crowd.
Well, they're excited to see you here. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling fine.
Well, you know, Jim, and you've told me I can call you Jim,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
How would you feel I started calling you Dr. J? Would you be okay with that? Or... Well, Jim, you know, you're known for your advice and your counsel and your teaching on the subject of the family, but I think people would be very surprised to know about your family, your father and mother, your father, James Sr., your mother, Myrtle, raised you. You were an only child, but your father, a very talented artist and also an itinerant evangelist. So he was gone a lot of the time. And so you spent time on your own, and you even spent a year in the care of your great aunt. How did that affect you? And tell me a little bit about your childhood.
Well, it was very difficult, Greg. First of all, I was an only child because my mother couldn't have any more children. She had a bone structure that did not allow her to have children. They told her that she should not have any children. And my dad came to my mother and said, I've been praying about this, and the Lord told me, you're going to have a son. Well, I had... a very close family. I don't want to imply that there was any lack of commitment there, but my dad was committed also to evangelism. I mean, that was the passion of his life. And before I got in school, I just traveled with him. And then when it was time to go to school, there was not homeschooling at that time. And they didn't know what to do with me because my dad needed my mother. And so I stayed with my great aunt when I was in the first grade and part of the second. And my dad and mom would come back every 6 weeks or so to see me. And it was very difficult. I felt abandoned. And my dad saw it. And he came home on one of those occasions and he said, Jimmy is becoming more like his great aunt than he is us. And we cannot do that to him. And so he bought a house. My mother stayed with me till I was out of high school.
So he made a sacrifice.
He made an unbelievable sacrifice because he was very close to my mother and needed her. But he gave me priority. And when he would come home then, he was mine. And so we had a very close family.
Now, there's a book about your life, a biography called Family Man. And in that book, it mentions that your father's greatest passion was winning people to Christ. What is your greatest passion?
Well, it's the same passion, Greg, but it is through the family. The family is like the red blood cell in the body. It carries a globule of oxygen having to do with the gospel. And so that is what I'm trying to do, is to use the family, strengthen the family, support the family, and therefore pass on the gospel of Jesus Christ to others.
Your father's ministry was not widely known except through your mentioning of him. And one day the Lord spoke to your father. And this is also in your book or in the book about your life, Family Man. And the Lord spoke to him, and your father was not one to say, the Lord spoke to me all the time. So when he said it, it carried weight. And the Lord spoke to your father, James Sr., and said to him, you're going to reach thousands of people, perhaps millions, from coast to coast and around the world, but it isn't going to be through you. It's going to be through your son. That would be you. Yeah. And so you heard that later in life, didn't you?
That was one of the most dramatic events in my life. My father was a praying man. Yeah. He prayed sometimes 3 and 4 hours a day.
Wow.
I mean, he was known in his town as the man who had no leather on the toes of his shoes because he spent so much time on his knees. He wore out the toes before he did the soles. And he was such a good, godly man. And toward the end of his life, he'd had a heart attack. His brother-in-law had cancer, and he was a minister too. And my dad was determined that God was going to give them more time to win souls. And so he had been praying for 3 days and three nights without stopping about that, about giving them an opportunity to continue to minister. And about 5 o'clock that morning, the Lord spoke to him and said, I've heard your prayer. I know your passion. You want to serve me. And I'm going to answer it. You're going to reach millions of people around the world, but it's not going to be through you. My uncle died that day.
Wow.
And my father had a heart attack the next day from which he never recovered. And he wasn't able to tell me that story. And I didn't find out about it for 7 years.
Unbelievable. In your biography, you're quoted to say the two most important things to you are, number one, ensuring that your loved ones get to heaven, your family and your loved ones, and number two, living the best possible Christian life. Why is that important to you?
Greg, why is it important to all of us? Yeah. I mean, what else is there?
Yeah.
What can compete with that?
That's true.
What, becoming famous, getting a lot of money, having buildings with your name on them, being a great artist, being a great musician, what else comes close to this task? And if you don't get it done with regard to your children, you'll never see them again. Yeah. If that won't motivate you to give priority to your children, I really don't know what will.
That's right. You know, you can hardly think of the name Jim Dobson without thinking of Shirley Dobson. There's just certain names that go together. You know, Ron and Nancy Reagan, Billy and Ruth Graham, Jim and Shirley Dobson. And your story of how you met your wife-to-be is a classic American love story. And your wife was the homecoming queen. You were the captain of the tennis team. And so you met for the first time on your college campus, and you were in your tennis outfit, probably on your way to practice. Do you remember the first thing that Shirley said to you when she saw you?
Well, this tells you a lot about Shirley, because first of all, she's got a great sense of humor, but she's also very feisty.
Yeah.
And that's what I fell in love with.
Yes.
And that little flirt walked up to me. And she said, hi, legs.
Hi, legs. Yeah.
And I thought, man, anybody who likes my legs can't be all bad.
Yeah. And and back in those days, shorts were shorter, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, they
were. So there was more leg showing.
Absolutely. But there was a sequel to that, because several days later, I figured I get to know this girl that has come up there and said that to me. And she was standing out on campus after dinner one night, and I walked up to her, and I had a nickel, and I was flipping it in the air. And I said, I tell you what, Shirley, I'd like to flip this nickel, and if I can call it heads or tails, I will win a hamburger, and you buy me a hamburger. And she said, well, I'll take you up on that. I mean, it's brilliant. Brilliant. I win both ways.
That's true.
I get a hamburger, or I get a date, or both.
That's right, win-win. Yeah.
So I flipped it, and I won. And she said, oh, no, you're going double or nothing. So I went double or nothing, I won again.
Yeah.
And I had two hamburgers. Things are going in the right direction.
Yeah.
I flipped it again. I won again. I won 32 hamburgers. Stand up
nice.
There. She's been frying them ever since.
You know, Shirley, her maiden name was Deer. Didn't you write a poem for her?
Yeah. Well, when she was running for homecoming queen, I had graduated by then, and she asked me to come back and be her campaign manager. And so I thought, how can I draw attention to this? So there was a little path on campus where everybody had to go. At one time or another, everybody went by that moment, that place. And so I made a poster, and I wrote a poem. And it said, 100 years ago today, a wilderness was here. A man with powder in his gun went forth to hunt a deer. But now that things have changed somewhat, a school has been erected, and a deer with powder on her nose goes forth to be elected.
Very good.
She won. She won.
She won.
She won because of me.
Yeah, because of you.
Did, yeah.
Now, Jim, Shirley had a rough childhood. Her parents divorced. She was raised in her father was an alcoholic. And so when you were going out together, before you were married, you made a commitment to her. You said, I want you to know. Will you tell me what you said instead of me reading it? What did you say to Shirley?
People here who have experienced alcoholism in the family know there's shame associated with that. You don't want anybody to know it.
Yeah.
And so everybody hides it. And Shirley felt that way. They lived in very squalid circumstances, mm-hmm. tiny little shotgun house, and her mother had to work in a cannery in the middle of the night to support Shirley and her brother. So it was not easy, and it's amazing that Shirley got on her knees at 6, 7, 8, 9 years of age and prayed for her future husband. Mm. She was praying for me. She didn't know me, and we didn't meet till we were in college. But that little kid was talking to the Lord. Yeah. She had nothing to give him. She didn't have any money. She had no influence. She had nothing. But he heard her and answered her prayer. So we went together for 3 or 4 months through a summer before I knew that she had had a tough childhood. Mm-hmm. She had not shared it with me. She's afraid to tell me.
Yeah.
And one night she said to me, I've really got something that you need to know. And she told me about her childhood. And rather than leaving her, my response was, Shirley, my purpose, if we are to live together and marry and be together the rest of our lives, this came a little later, I want to make up to you for what you've lost and for what you experienced.
Yeah.
And that's been sort of a goal of my life, to take care of her and to love her.
Is that something that every Christian husband should do, do you think? That's great.
I think that's one of the roles that God has given to men. It is, in fact, there are 5 elements to it. Mm-hmm. There is respect. A woman deserves respect, not only the husband for his wife, but for women.
Yeah.
And to protect.
Yes.
I wanted to protect Shirley from this pain. And to provide for.
Right.
And to provide leadership for. I believe that's a godly role.
That's right.
And to then provide leadership for the rest of the family. I think that is what God calls us to do.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, when you have a boy and you're trying to train him to be a godly man, you start with those. You say, first of all, you take a girl out for a date. You pay that bill.
Yeah.
This is your responsibility.
Right.
Yeah. Right, ladies? Is this
Yes.
I thought there would be a standing ovation. I'm
it's early still.
Disappointed.
Yeah.
And this may surprise you, too. your job is to protect her, to get her home safely.
Yeah.
And as a symbol of that, I think the guy should walk on the street side when he is with her.
I like
it's
that.
A way of saying, I am responsible for you. And then, of course, to live a moral and godly life before her, and to serve her in servant leadership.
Right.
That if you want to teach a boy to be a man, that's where you start with those responsibilities.
Well, this passion that you have for the family that started with your own marriage has continued on. Now, you were over there at USC in the School of Medicine, and you had a very productive career and actually started your ministry a bit later in life, didn't you? Because you felt directed, obviously, by the Lord to make this the focus of your life and ministry.
Do you remember the name of Dr. Clyde Naramore?
Of course.
He had a great influence on me, and he gave a speech one time and said, if there are promising students out there who would like to go into this field, I will meet with them.
Right.
And my aunt heard it and told me about it. I went to meet with him. I spent an afternoon with him, and he laid my life out for me. And he said, you're going to need a PhD. And if you do that, don't get married too soon. And he just he gave me very specific advice, and that's what I did. And that's why I came into my professional life a little bit later. But
you got married a little sooner than he told you to, though, right? Or
no, I was pretty much on target. I followed those rules. You know, the Lord was in that. I just look back on it. Of course, my mom and dad were praying for me. The night that I went over to SC to matriculate and register, I was scared because you're always scared when you there's 30,000 students there. And I was standing in this long line waiting to register. And a man that had gone to my college, he was 2 years older than me, had already gotten his PhD and was a professor there.
Wow.
And he came over to me and he said, now, you know, I not only know you, but I believe in you. And come on up to my office. Took me out of line up to the office and said, I will be your advisor. We're going to do this thing together.
Wow.
I never had any disrespect for my Christian faith at USC.
Wow.
And he told me every class to take. I mean, it was just amazing what happened there. Yeah.
Now, you went on to found Focus on the Family in 1977. Your radio broadcast was heard on over 7,000 stations worldwide, heard by more than 220 million people in 164 countries. Since then, you've gone on to found your ministry, Family Talk Now. And so your father's word about you influencing many really turned out to be true, didn't it?
It really did. And I told you I didn't know about it until 7 years later.
Yeah.
I was on the gambling commission at that time. Yeah. It was the hardest, most difficult, most nasty, terrible assignment I've ever had. 18 months of seeing stuff that's just, I mean, people think of pornography as being airbrushed nudity and so on. I mean, it is wretched stuff. It was then, it's worse today.
Yeah.
And I was running Focus on the Family, and I was advising President Reagan and the others, and I got tired.
Yeah.
People think that those who are in ministry, yourself included, are driven by ego needs that forces them to do what they do. It is not true. I contemplated, I was asking the Lord, how long can I do this? Because I was really worn out. And I got a letter from my aunt, is the one that my dad had told about that prayer. And she laid it out for me, and her last line is, the end is not yet. And so far, the end is not yet for what I'm doing now.
That's right. Not at all. Yeah.
Greg, I left USC. That was a plum of a position. I was doing what I loved, what I was trained for. I was doing research, and I think we were accomplishing a lot. I was director of of a national study in 15 major medical centers of a disorder called phenylketonuria. And I could have enjoyed staying there, but I saw the family unraveling. I don't want to sound like Father Time here, but I saw where we are today.
Yeah.
I recognized what abortion was going to mean.
Yeah.
And what the assault on the definition of marriage was right. going to be, and what the attack on righteousness was going to be. And I just felt the Lord put his hand in my back and say, you need to do what you can. And so I walked out of there and started this little two-room office. I didn't know where it was going or what would happen. But that was a major turning point for me.
You know, it's been said that a family can survive without a nation, but a nation cannot survive without the family. The family is so important to you. It's so important to our country. Just very quickly, define what the family is. We hear that word a lot. What is the family?
Well, it's defined in Genesis,
right.
Genesis 2:24, when it says, "For this cause a man shall leave his mother and father
That's
and
right.
cleave to his wife.
His wife.
And the two shall be one flesh." That's right. The beginning of the family, the
yep.
beginning of marriage. It was not man's idea, it was God's idea.
Yep.
That attraction between men and women has characterized the basic social unit in every continent. It's not just a Christian thing. In fact,
yeah.
it wasn't Christian. Christ hadn't come yet.
Yeah.
But it was divinely inspired. And it is the ground floor. It's the foundation.
Right.
Everything sits on it.
Yeah.
Everything, our institutions, our government,
yeah.
our way of life, everything rests on that foundation. And if you undermine it and you weaken it, and you redefine it, and you tear into its fabric, the whole superstructure could come down.
Mm.
And that's what's happened in other civilization, and it's going to happen to us if we're foolish enough to walk away from it.
Yes, that's right. You know, the breakdown of the family, as you've been talking about, is at the root of so many social ills, so many problems in our culture today, and specifically the lack of fathers. You know, a lot of studies have been done, and they found that, for instance, 63% of teenagers who attempt suicide come from fatherless homes. A child that is from a fatherless home is 68% more likely to use drugs or alcohol, more likely to become sexually active at an early age, 3 times more likely to commit a violent crime, 71% of high school dropouts from fatherless homes, 90% of all homeless and runaway children from fatherless homes, and it just goes on and on. Why is fatherlessness at the root of so many of our nation's problems?
Because of the role that fathers are supposed to play.
Mm-hmm.
On the statistics that you just listed with regard to them, more than 70% mm-hmm. of African American babies are born out of wedlock.
Yeah.
Then you add divorce to that
yeah.
and other things that take fathers out of the home, and the stupidity, the foolishness of the late 60s when they
right.
decided that if a man stays in the home, the family is not supported by the government. They
yeah.
destroyed
yeah.
the black family. And it is reeling now. And take a look at what inner city life is like. Without this leadership, you know, when you don't have a man to teach a boy what it means to be a man.
Yeah.
And I tell you something else. Girls need their dads as much as boys do.
Yeah.
And we're going to be going to be talking about this bringing up boys.
Yes.
Bringing up girls is another message, but I want to talk about what it means to teach a boy what it means
yeah.
to be a boy. He doesn't
yeah.
know when he's born.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not something that's automatic. It
yeah.
has to be taught. And if you have a single mother and the husband's gone and his influence is not there, you got to find a substitute for him
yeah.
because a woman is not equipped to teach a boy how to be a man.
Right.
That has to come from a man.
That's right.
And so when that is torn down, then the consequences throughout the culture are really terrible.
What an important point to end with here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and if you'd like more information about our ministry here at Family Talk, or to pick up a copy of my dad's book, Bringing Up Boys, which he alluded to at the end of the broadcast, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to check back with us tomorrow for the conclusion of our Q&A between Dr. Dobson and Pastor Greg Laurie, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.